Everyone, and welcome to minute 61 of season 10 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me this week is our two very special guests, father and daughter tag team of movie fans. Who for some reason actually like this podcast also. So welcome to the show, Joe and Cassie Turo.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The truth is, it's my honor to have you guys.
Thank you.
It's really cool
to be here.
Yeah. I'm very happy just to have you guys on because, I mean, Joe, come on. You and I have been writing back and forth ever since season one, so...
Well, you keep doing movies I love. I mean, you've done my favorite movie of all time. You've done the best Thanksgiving movie of all time. You've done one of the best Christmas movies and one of the best action movies of all time. My favorite rom-com, my second favorite World War II movie. I mean, I can go on and on.
Okay, that's fine. And, you know, the truth is, apparently we're kindred spirits because, you know, those all fit my description of just about every one of those movies too.
Yes. You know, yes. Children of the 70s too. Yes.
Yes, exactly. All right. So minute 61 begins with the police car skidding along and ends with the chips guys starting to get moving. Even though they're not really the California Highway Patrol, but still, you know, they're always chips guys. You know, cops on motorcycles are always chips. There's no doubt about it. You can put them anywhere in the country.
These guys are just missing the sunglasses.
Yeah. Well, come on. It's New York in what's assumed to be late fall. I mean, again, we don't know the exact day of when this all transpires.
Right.
But, based on what it looks like it's around somewhere in the fall.
Yeah.
You know,
and how everybody's dressed. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't look too cold, but it also doesn't look hot. So it's somewhere in the middle there. And maybe it's just because of the cinematography of the 70s makes it look a little darker. So therefore, you'd say it's not spring. I don't know.
Well, that's New York any day. That's the weather. It's crazy. Yeah. We've had weather like even the end of the summer here was ridiculous. It was like 80 degrees one day and 65 the next. So, yeah. So it hasn't changed since 1974.
Okay, I mean that makes sense. You know, consistency.
Yeah,
isn't that the way you want? You want things to be somewhat predictable. So there you go. Yeah.
Especially in New York, yes.
That's true. That's very true. All right, so we ended things on Friday with the police car rushing with $1 million, actually flipping over, or trying to avoid hitting someone, I think it was a guy on a bike or maybe a motorcycle, and he ends up skidding and hits a newsstand. And the way that this minute begins is we have the police car just continue going down. Are they in Columbus? I'm trying to remember where they are. Houston.
I think it was last
week we talked about specifically what street this was. I'm trying to remember. As a New Yorker, you probably know much better than I do.
It looked like it was somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And it's changed a bit since then, but yes.
A little bit. Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last week about how you know, New York has changed even though the streets are the same.
Yeah.
You know, the look is a little different. How's that?
You know? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Look at the police cars is different. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, true. I'm sure they still have some of these in the garage, though. I wouldn't doubt it.
They might. Probably. But, again, I don't know how much use they have for them. You know, I guess that all depends on, you know, what the current PC thinks, you know, what he needs. You know, I don't know if he needs cars from 50 years ago. Probably.
No, well, that's always an interesting topic, too, around here.
Yeah. Okay.
Our police commissioners.
Yeah. Okay. Again, we don't get into politics here, so
no.
As far away from that as possible. You know, as far as I'm concerned, the police commissioner is Frank Reagan, and that's it. You know.
Yes.
You know, there's no question about that. He's a police commissioner for like 15 years, and that's it. You know, like no one wants to change him because, you know, why would you change Tom Selleck? He's the best police commissioner around. You know,
I have to agree there. Yes.
So yeah, absolutely, makes sense.
So Cassie has interesting thing about the car crash.
So the car crash, like literally when they were speeding through the city, I was like, Dad, like this car is gonna crash, because I'd never seen this movie before. It was my first time watching it with him. He's been wanting to get me to watch it. So when we were doing the podcast, I was like, yeah, like I'll watch it with you. And I was literally like, Dad, this police car is literally gonna crash like any second now. And then he's gonna be like, we have no time, because the car's gonna crash and they're not gonna get the money. And when it happened, I just started laughing, because I was like, wow, like this, I knew it. Like I knew that this was gonna happen to them. And then instantly he's like, we have no time, what do you mean? And it's just like, like it was just really hilarious to me. That probably sounds horrible, because car crashes are not funny, but I was just like, wow.
Well, car crashes in movies that are staged can be funny. You know, we're not talking about
true.
Real car crashes are a completely different situation. But we're talking about a staged one in movies, you know, where most of the time they're going to be making the car crash as unbelievable as possible, you know, in order to wow people. So, you know, you don't have to feel bad for the people that are, you know, for the stuntmen that are doing the work there. Yeah. But that's just really cool. I had forgotten to ask. I just assumed that you both are like massive fans of this movie. I mean, Joe, I know you.
No,
No,
he loves this movie. He's been trying to get me to watch it. And I had never seen it, so I was like, you know what? Like, I'll watch this with you, Dad. Like, you know. But I really liked it. It was really entertaining. I want to make like a drinking game out of whenever he says time. Like I want to be like, if that's a drinking game, I feel like he'd be like drunk within like the first like 45 minutes.
Oh, absolutely. Oh god. Yes. Even I mean, even he's not even the only character to even say it, because I think Blue says it like twice just in this minute. Yeah. So.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, you'd be out.
I don't play drinking games.
The first time I saw this was probably on TV in the late 70s with my dad, because he had seen it and he saw it was on TV. He wanted to get me to watch it, and I absolutely loved it from the first time I saw it. It was so much fun. My dad was a huge Walter Matthau fan. And it's funny, because I was like, I could swear I saw this on the 4:30 movie, which was the greatest TV show ever invented. I used to come home from school, do my homework, watch a couple cartoons, and then the 4:30 movie came on. And didn't matter what was on, it was on in my house no matter what.
Wait, was this on WPIX, or was this on?
It was on WABC in New York.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Not
11 or 5. See, I'm a little familiar with New York area.
But the 4:30 movie was like, for a kid growing up in the 70s, was film school 101. I mean, it was just anything. That's where I first saw The Great Escape. That's where I first saw a lot of Godzilla movies, all the Planet of the Apes movies. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do some research. I'm going to find out exactly when The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 was on the 4:30 movie. I found this old website, and I'm looking through. This guy had this whole schedule. And The Taken Pelham 1-2-3 was never on the 4:30 movie. I was like, oh, well, there goes 20 minutes of the first episode I'm taping with Rob. I was like, dang.
I give you a lot of credit for doing the research. You know,
I was so depressed. Where did I see it?
As I'm sure you've heard over many of the episodes that I've put out over the last few years, you know, there are many times where, you know, doing the research just leads you to a dead end. It happens.
Yes.
But the goal, you know, the joy of it is actually, you know, trying to do the legwork for it. You know?
Yeah. I was a little depressed about that, but it could lead to a huge blog post for me one day down the road. So I must have seen it on like a million-dollar movie on WOR on like a Saturday or Sunday in the late 70s with him. Over the years, I'd seen it once or twice. I think I saw it at Film Forum down in the village, because we used to work like two blocks away when I worked for Penguin Books. And we used to go to Film Forum all the time. And they must have done one of their New York series. So I'm pretty sure my friends and I went to see it then. And then over the years, it's become, there are three films where I own or have owned the book, the Laserdisc, the DVD, the Blu-ray, and the soundtrack.
Wait, you skipped and... the VHS.
The VHS. I never owned the VHS of this one. The other two movies I did.
Okay.
And the other two movies are, of course, The Great Escape and Jaws. Okay. And I also, thanks to in Midsummer, I did it'll splurge a little bit, and I now own the T-shirt, as you can see, of the Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Wow! Yeah, that's great.
So yeah, I picked up Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, Great Escape T-shirt finally, and Hard Boiled. So now my top five movies, I own all the T-shirts. The other two being Jaws and Aliens.
So, oh, that's really cool. So every day this week you're going to be with a different shirt, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Of course, absolutely. Yes, we'll go from 5-1 because Taking of Pelham 1-3 is my fifth favorite movie of all time.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
So every time I watch it, I love it more and more. So.
Okay, I completely agree with just about every one of the movies that I've done so far. Every time I watch them, I enjoy it a little more because I notice different things that I hadn't noticed before, especially when you're doing them minute by minute. So, you know, you're going to dive into – you're going to look at things in a different perspective.
Yes, absolutely. 100%.
That works really well from that perspective too. Wow. That's great. And are you familiar with either of the two remakes? I mean, Kathy, I'm assuming you haven't seen the remake since –
about the one with John Travolta, because when I was telling my friend I was doing this podcast, she was like, oh my gosh, my mom has seen that movie. John Travolta's in it. She loves that one. And I was like, no. That's not the one we're doing. we're doing the original. Like, that's a remake.
Thank God.
So, yeah.
Oh,
I know about that remake, but I haven't seen it.
That's awful.
Have you seen
you
it?
You can. Yeah, oh, it's terrible.
Have you seen the made-for-TV one that they did?
I have. I thought that one was interesting. Like, I kind of liked it. I didn't love it because it was like, you know, it's not the original. But it was okay. I saw what they were going for. So.
Right.
But I thought Edward James Olmos, Lorraine Bracco they were pretty good in it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I forgot that Vincent D'Onofrio was in that.
Yeah, he's not as good of as a Mr. Blue as Robert Shaw. No question about that.
No, he's not. So, and it's always hard to see Vincent D'Onofrio without thinking of either Full Metal Jacket or now Daredevil. So,
right. Okay. For me, it's always going to be Full Metal Jacket. There's
nothing. Which actually, I made Cassie watch. We watched that end of the summer also.
Oh, yep. Cool. Okay, so Cassie now knows all about the Mickey Mouse Club. All right, so let's actually start talking about this one.
All right, so, let's do that.
All right, so you know, we saw the police car skid, and then the shot changes, and we're back with Garber, and we hear him you know, doing his DJ shtick and going, "What do you mean it's been wrecked? There's no more time. We're out of time." And then the shot moves back to Daniels, and Daniels says, "I know we're out of time. What do you expect me to do? They couldn't make it. That's all." And he goes, "What do you mean, that's all? They're just about to shoot an innocent person, sir. How can they do that if they know the truck is wrecked? How can they expect us to be on time?" So, I mean, it's a funny conversation that the two of them are having between them, because, again, this conversation is built for what we're about to find out from Garber. You know, whatever they're saying up until now is completely – it's inconsequential, you know, this whole conversation between them. And then Garber goes, "They don't know anything down there. How can they know anything? Where are they?" And then he stops and he thinks for a second and he goes, "Holy mackerel, that's it."
too fun. And
yeah, because again, it's when you've seen this movie so many times, it's nice seeing the light bulb, turn on above his head as this is going on. But it, on the other hand, I don't know if him saying "Holy mackerel" sounds genuine enough. You'd think that he might have used some more of a colorful metaphor with that instead, or something like that. It made it sound to me that this was like a term that they threw in there in order to be able to use it for TV viewing, and that would be it.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
That they said, come on, it's the 70s. There's no way anyone's gonna be able to watch it if they don't see it in the theater until it's on TV. So, all right, let's tone things down a little bit. I mean, again, later this week, we'll know that doesn't completely compute, but at least for this scene, it does.
Yeah, no, that's true. I never really thought of it that way.
So do either of you know the origin of the term "holy mackerel"?
Wow. This is the first curveball you've thrown so far already. No, I have no idea. It's gotta be, I mean, Cassie, you took
I mean,
religion
I
for how many
really,
years?
I don't know exactly. I mean, I could be way off, but I would assume maybe it has something to do with like fishing, but like I have no idea. I didn't learn that in history class.
Yeah, I don't think this is something that they would be teaching in history class. I'm on the one hand, it makes it sound like it's something they took from the 1960s Batman TV show. That this is something that you could hear Robin say, but that would be about it. Old mackerel Batman, that type of thing. But doing a little bit of research on the term, the phrase "holy mackerel," so it originated in the early 19th century, and it became a euphemism for Holy Mary or Holy Mary Mother of God.
Really?
But it's somewhat of a jab at Roman Catholics because Roman Catholics were referred to as mackerel snappers for the tradition of eating fish on Fridays.
Oh.
You didn't learn that in high school, Cassie? Come on.
No, I went to
No.
Catholic school for elementary, middle, and high school, and wow. I mean, I guess they wouldn't want to teach me that.
No. Probably not.
Making fun of. That's cool though. That's funny. That's like a really cool fact, actually. Who knew? But I guess it did have something to do with fish, so.
Okay, well, obviously they're using the term mackerel, but yeah.
Mackerel snappers. That's great.
Yes.
I have to write that down.
Right, but again, they could have used so many other phrases, in place of that. So it just seems a little out of place, but it's still fun to hear Garber say it. And then we see him switch the push the button so that he's no longer talking to Daniels, and now he's going to be talking back to the train itself, and we hear him say, "Pallet 1, 2, 3. The money has arrived. Repeat, the money has arrived. Do you read me, Pallet 1, 2, 3? The money has arrived." So again, this is great. I mean, Cassie, this was the first time that you saw this. What did you think about the idea of what he just did right now? Because again, he's lying. He's,
Yeah, no, but I mean, I thought it was like kind of smart. I mean, like, he's right. Like, they don't know where they are, and they were on the way, and I guess, like, I don't know, by I guess it's like, I don't know, 'cause he's talking, I don't know. I just think it was kind of smart. I mean, sometimes that's you gotta lie a little bit to get the job done, And he knows that they're gonna start killing people, so he's like, you know what? Like, we're just gonna say it's there, and they better make it there.
Well, I think by this time they definitely know that they're serious. So.
They do and they don't. I mean, they know that Kaz is dead. That they know. But are they? As we'll see shortly. He's not really. Garber's not 100% sure if they actually would have killed a passenger at this point, and that's why, shortly he's actually going to be asking that question. I think tomorrow. Yeah, that's just you know, and then finally when Blue responds, what's great is that we see Garber and he looks like he's like about to have a heart attack. You know, when when Blue says, "This is Palin 123, you made it just in time, didn't you?" You know, and like he's completely relieved about the fact that that he's found a way to, you know, to deal with the idea that they can only hear him and not see him. You know, which again is great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if again, obviously we know that they remade this movie and it's terrible, but if they were to remake this movie nowadays, it would be much more visual. It wouldn't just be audio contact between them. And you know, this particular thing works really well by saying, you know, that okay, they can't see that we're lying. There's no way of them knowing. You know, like you'd think that in a movie nowadays, they'd have somebody, you know, have a spotter or something like that, you know, telling Blue, okay, you know, the money's here or something like that. You know, there'd be some visual way for him to be able to confirm this. But back then, they didn't need it, you know. And, you know, it still works the way that they do that.
Yeah. Well, because the 70s is the best.
Of course. And that's fine.
When they knew how to make movies.
That's true. Again, it goes back to the fact that you know, one of the reasons why I always say I don't like remakes is because, you know, when you make a movie, you're making it for that particular time and place of when it's, you know, when the movie's being made. You know, a perfect example is, you know, I talked about this a lot during Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and even when Harry Met Sally, you know, if cell phones were around when either of those movies were made, those movies wouldn't have been made because it would have just changed everything. You know, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, if Neil had a cell phone, none of this would have happened.
Right, you could have just called an Uber.
Something would, you know, the plot is based on the fact that he has no way of basically contacting home. That's what it comes down to. And just to have thrown it out and say, okay, well, he loses his cell phone. Okay, so you borrow someone else's. You know, the only plausible way is if there's some catastrophic event that all cell phones are dead, you know, something like that. But again,
that's a Stephen King book.
Exactly. You don't need that in a movie from the 80s. You know, like in this movie, you don't need to visually be able. They probably didn't even think about it at the time that you could visually see everything that's going on. You know, so and that's fine. Again, you know, that's why this movie works so well as a movie from 1974.
Yeah.
You know, and I like that about it. Again, it's one of my main motivations as to why I dislike remakes, because you have to retool things in order for it to fit in to whatever you're doing nowadays. You know,
totally updating it for a new audience, and it just sometimes it works, but most times it doesn't.
Yeah. Right. No, I agree. You have to then update the technology, and the technology in some ways can completely destroy everything that you've done. I mean, again, Star Wars is a perfect example, you know, where they made prequels where we had better technology than the people in the original Star Wars. And they had to, I guess, dumb down their technology in ways that it's still plausible, but still amazing technology, that type of thing. So, you know, I just love the way that they did that. Okay, and then the scene changes, and we're now back at the crash site where the two cops are still stuck in the car. You know, but another cop comes over and has them hand them the loot. It's like, we don't care about you, just give us the money. And you know, he takes the money and then gives it to these two cops on motorcycles and just basically screams at them and goes, "Get it up there. Move."
Yeah. And that poor guy laying in the car, I always felt bad for him.
Yeah.
He did not look good.
No, he doesn't look good at all.
No.
And then they have a really, really interesting shot towards the end of this minute where, you know, we see Frank sitting at his, we're back in the control center. So we see Frank sitting at his desk and there's two guys standing behind him. We have no idea who these guys are. Never seen them before in the movie. And Garber looks over at them and one of these guys gives Garber the okay sign, you know, with his finger.
With a goofy, like a goofy look on his face, with too. A
really, really goofy look. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what do you know about the hand signal of okay, the okay gesture?
Wow. I mean, I know what it's used for, but how it originated, wow. I mean, is it maybe a sign language thing?
I don't know. I feel like maybe maybe it was used like because people I don't know, maybe with like I feel like people used to gesture a lot more back in the day rather than like from long distances. So maybe it was like used like in, I don't know, if maybe like not navigation, like, but like okay, like you're good to go for like, I don't know, like
a military thing maybe?
Oh, maybe military. I don't know, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, well, first of all, like it goes all the way back to the 5th century BC.
Oh.
Whoa!
Well.
Where they have pictures on painted vases and stuff like that from Greece back then that basically this, it was known as an expression of love at the time. Because the idea was is that the putting the thumb and forefinger together would mimic kissing lips. And that was the way that one would pronounce, I guess, profess their love for one another. Basically making a ring, you know, in their, you know, between those two fingers and stuff like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Makes sense, though.
Yeah, it does. I never would have guessed.
Never would have guessed that, but, you know, it makes sense. Yeah.
Then in Buddhism and Hinduism, it's it's known as a symbol of inner perfection.
Huh.
So it's the idea of grasping something literally or figuratively, and that the shape formed by that union represents the epitome of perfection, a circle. So that's why it's known as, you're basically saying exactly right or perfect, you know, by the way that you're gesturing and stuff like that. It's used quite often in like scuba diving and stuff like that in order to, you know, to express I'm okay, are you okay, things like that. Obviously it's used in sign language also for that same thing. It denotes approval, agreement, or that everything is well, everything is okay, things like that. There are also negative meanings for it. Sometimes with trolling, so people will use that if a hoax was successful, and it's used in memes, it's sometimes used also in white supremacist beliefs and things like that.
Oh, great.
Again, we try not to go that far try to stay as far in the middle as possible with things. But, you know, because it came up, you know, that's why it's, you know, being mentioned here. But, you know, obviously you have the emoji that you can use also.
Yes, yes, all the time.
Yeah. Exactly. Probably too much. I prefer a thumbs up, but that's fine too.
Yeah, me too.
I also prefer a thumbs up. I feel like it's also easier.
Well, with emoji, it doesn't make a difference. It's the same, you know, it's the same effort. this emoji or that emoji, isn't it?
It's less sarcastic, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But sometimes a thumbs up can be sarcastic.
That's true. And what's funny is that the line that Frank says as this guy is doing it is, you know, Frank says, "I hope it works."
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it goes with what you're saying about being sarcastic, skeptical, things like that. You know.
Yeah.
But I also just love the the shot here shows, you know, Frank looking over, and you see one guy making the okay symbol, and the other one's got his arms crossed, you know, in a very stern look. You know, not really sure where he's going with that, but okay.
Yeah. They're just again, like corporate schmoes, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But I think part of the ideas is they're just trying to show us that everyone's paying attention to what Garber's doing here.
Oh, and, yeah. That comes up more in the next couple minutes too. Yes. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the idea behind here, you know. And I mean, again, they show this for like 2 seconds. It's not even, we don't even see it for very long, because then the shot goes back to the New York street where, you know, you see these two guys are still stuck in the overturned police car, you know, with one of the other guys talking to them. And then the two Chips guys start driving off, and that's the way that this minute ends. So did either of you have anything else you wanted to add to this minute?
Oh God, I could go on for an hour about this minute probably. The accent from Matthau, just innocent poison. I mean, nobody says that. I mean, that's like over and above New York accent. Well, true. Yes. I mean, I think that was Matthau's real accent, to be honest. It could have been.
I don't know. I'll never be able to find out, because unfortunately his son declined to be on the show. I contacted him, and
that's too bad.
I got the impression that he's just too busy right now. And he said, get in touch with me in the future if you do anything else that's related to my father. Maybe he just doesn't particularly like this movie. That could also be one of the things. You know, maybe he doesn't have anything to say about this movie with his father, which again is fair.
Interesting. Yeah. 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 I love the shot of Matthau though. When they first cut to him in the beginning of the minute, I don't think there's really a shot like that in the rest of the film, where you just show him almost from desk level up, and then they do the quick pan down to the when he presses the button to talk to Blue. I don't think there's a shot like that in the movie at all, and I just loved it. Like each time, I must have watched this minute like 10 times just to see that shot, which I thought was fantastic.
Well, I think they did it in order to make it that we understand that he's talking to a different person now, because when they're recording this, he doesn't need that. He's really not talking for those who don't understand the way movies work. He's really not talking to Robert Shaw. it goes back to the fact that it's very visual. It's showing us that he's pushed a different button to be able to talk to someone else. I mean, Joe, you probably remember just like I do the telephones that had different lines where you just had to push, you know, you had to push really hard on the button in order to go to a different line.
Oh, God, yes. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, there were like five of them. You got to push like really hard to figure out which line you're picking up. Cassie, you probably have no idea what we're talking about. But that's
no, not at all.
Cassie, do you know what a rotary phone is?
A rotary phone? Yes, that's the one where you like spin it, right?
Okay, sort of.
Like you like put the number and you spin it, and then it's like yeah.
And then you have to let it all go back, you know.
Yes. That sounds crazy. I can't even imagine making a phone call like that. I feel like I'd mess up.
And there are people who keep their finger in it the whole time as they're moving it back and forth, and there are those that just let it, you know, fall back into place on its own. You know,
those were the days.
Yes.
And you used to have to dial a 9. It would take like a whole minute to go all the way back. Like, oh.
Very good.
I just wanted to say, throughout this whole movie, I found Walter Matthau's like outfit as like just like a little bit ridiculous, like the yellow shirt and the bright yellow tie. Like I just found it like really just like kind of funny to look at. Like I don't think I've ever seen like a police.
You've never seen anyone with a mustard colored tie like that?
I don't believe so. I mean, I was like, wow, and he's like a police person, like wearing this outfit, like that's crazy. I was like, that's insane.
No, but he's got
I don't
the
know.
tweed jacket. That's what he needs. He needs a tweed jacket,
Oh,
and he probably
it ties it all together.
has elbow patches on it. I don't remember if he does, but he probably does.
We'll have to go through the old photo albums again, Cass, and you'll see some outfits you'll think that Matthau's outfit here is like the height of fashion compared to some of the
Wow.
outfits I used to have to dress up in. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. My kids sometimes look at some of my elementary school pictures and they're like, "What
Oh
the hell
gosh.
were you wearing back then?" And I was like,
Yeah.
"That's what grandma put on me, you know, that
Yep. The wide lapels,
That's
the
right.
colors that didn't match, but we thought they did. Oh my Lord.
Exactly.
Yes. Oi.
Exactly. All right. Well, what can you do? All right, so every Monday we have a segment called the Matthau Monday, where my guests will give their top five Walter Matthau performances. So because there's two of you, we're gonna do the snake fashion. So you guys can choose who's gonna go first. But one of you will start with your number five, the other one goes five, four, four, back and forth that way. So,
I
and
guess
if you
I'll go
argue,
first.
I'll decide. Yeah.
I'll go
Yeah,
first.
Dad, you go first.
I'll go first. All right. So, Walter Matthau was one of my dad's favorite actors. So I saw a lot of Matthau movies because of him. My dad unfortunately passed in '96, but I have my love of the '70s because of him, and the reason I like Walter Matthau is because of my dad. So, I mean, I have honorable mentions. I would put The Odd Couple and Grumpier Old Men. Not the first one. I like the second one better. But
Okay.
my number five is in honor of my dad, and that is his performance as the drunk in Earthquake, which I did see in Sense-A-Round in the theaters in 1974. Was that or 75? 74.
Came on
Yes.
74.
And my dad knew right away. He's like, that's Walter Matthau. And I'm just like, okay. So I think that was one of the few times my father stayed for the end credits of a movie. I can count on one hand how many times he did. We go to the movies and the credits come on, boom, he's out of there, beating the traffic, let's go home.
Well, I guess
But
it's good
this
that
time
they
he's
started
like,
the MCU when he was after he was around.
oh gosh, yeah, he ne yeah, forget it. There's no way he would not sit through 15 minutes of credits to see a 1 minute like tack on thing. But I remember we waited till the end credits, and he says, I want to see if that's Walter Matthau. And he's billed as Walter, I wrote it down, but I cannot pronounce it. Matthush, whatever. I know Joe Amodi, I think, said it much
Yes.
better in week 4.
Yes.
Yeah, and he was so happy, my father. He was like, oh, I knew that was Walter Matthau. So that's my number five is Earthquake.
All right. Excellent. So, Cassie, what's your number five?
Okay, so I have to like preface with this. Like, I haven't seen a lot of his movies all the way through, but like, I've seen parts and at least like half of some of them. So, some of them are kind of like from like bits and pieces that I've seen. I hope that that's okay
Well,
because I wanted to like
counts.
have
As far as I'm concerned, if you've seen 50.1% of a movie, you've seen it. You know that type of thing.
okay.
Obviously, you're gonna miss what happens towards the end. But
Yeah.
for me, that's what's considered seeing something. You've seen the majority of it, so it's at
Yeah.
least, you
So
can take
like
it off.
so I mean, so the number five I have is him and Dennis the Menace, because like I've seen like a lot of that, and I don't know. I mean, I feel like I watched it, Dad, I feel like I watched Dennis the Menace with Grandma in Pennsylvania one time.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because when I would stay in Pennsylvania at our summer house with my grandma, we would watch a lot of like older stuff, and I think one time we actually did sit and watch at least half of Dennis the Menace. So that's my number five pick. I mean, I saw it when I was really young, but like I definitely do remember watching it, and it was pretty entertaining.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, so what is your number four?
Oh yes. Oh, okay. So my number four is The Odd Couple, because I've seen like parts of that with my dad, because my dad loves The Odd Couple, so that's That's my number four because I feel like it's a step up from Dennis the Menace for sure.
Oh, just a little.
Slightly, slightly.
Oh.
All right, Joe, what's your number four?
So for my number four, when I first started doing this, many months ago, started doing Math Out Monday. In fact, I probably had it in my head for a couple years now. I wanted to put Charlie Varrick or another completely underrated great 70s movie, The Laughing Policeman. But then I realized I cannot remember the last time I've seen either one of these movies. So I was trying to find them, couldn't find them anywhere. And then after Stephen J. Rubin was on and he talked about Lonely or the Brave, I'm like, I've never seen that. I gotta watch it. I loved it. Matthau was great in it, and that's my number four is Lonely or the Brave. It was so good.
Yeah,
I mean,
I still have to rewatch it. It's on my list.
it's oh, the screenplay was fantastic. It was so well. And Kirk Douglas was just phenomenal. And the score was great. Such a great movie. Really, really good. And the horse stole the whole movie. Yeah. But Matthau was great with the dog, like watching the dog from outside of the sheriff's office. Oh, I love that bit. It was so good.
Okay, well,
And
again,
then,
I'm gonna have to rewatch that. And
yeah, definitely. Definitely. Steve would be very happy if you watched
oh, I'm sure he will.
that. All right. And then my number three, since we're doing Snake, is this movie kind of means a lot to me because this is gonna be a little hard. My friend Tom Flynn, Cassie's godfather, actually, he my best friend, he had unfortunately passed away in the year 2000. And one of his favorite movies, the two of us, one of our favorite comedies was The Sunshine Boys. That's one that we would just quote all the time. It's like Matthau has some bits in there that are just classic. It's like she's a Virginian, and when he just yelled the finger, I mean that would just get us every time. So Tom would constantly quote that, like all the time. We'd quote the Sunshine Boys out of nowhere. So that always means a lot to me, and also. When Matthau in the beginning of this minute says, you know, we're out of time. What do you mean there's no time? Tom would quote that also. So I'm glad I got this minute. So that's my number three is the Sunshine Boys.
All right, excellent. All right, Cassie, you're up with number three.
All right, so my number three is the Bad News Bears because again, it's one of my dad's favorites. So I've seen some of it, not the whole thing all the way through, but I have a feeling after this, dad's probably gonna want to watch that with me, like the whole way through.
Yes.
And I mean, honestly, I just love I love a good sports movie, and yeah, so I'm looking forward to actually seeing the whole way through and not the remake, the
Yeah, oh my
original.
God.
definitely not the remake, but the sequels the sequels are fun because they're the same characters, but they're terrible. Yeah.
The Japan one is awful. Breaking Training has a special place in my heart because I don't know why. I
I
just
love
love
the
it.
special training where you get Reggie Jackson saying, "Let them play." You know, it's great.
Bob Watson.
Well, there's a lot of them. I
It's
think
no,
Reggie
it's but
Jackson. Not
no,
Reggie
Reggie.
Jackson.
It's Bob Watson. Bob Watson was on the Astros. So yeah,
Okay. All right. Whatever.
he looked like Reggie Jackson. That's why.
Okay.
It's the same
It's
look
been
with the glasses and
years, right?
yeah.
It's been years since I've seen it. So there you go.
Well,
Forgive me for that mistake.
seventies baseball is my go-to. So yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Not a
Yeah.
problem at all. All right. Cassie, you're
And
number
then
two.
my number two is Grumpier Old Men because I haven't seen the first one, but with Dad, I watched definitely about maybe like three quarters of it, like late one night. I think I'd like come home from class or something, and like he was watching it, and he was and mom, my mom loves the Grumpy Old Men movies, and but she was already asleep, so he was like, you know, your mother loves this movie, watch some of this with me. And so I think we watched like the last at least the last half of it, probably
Yeah.
like three quarters of it, but like it was really funny, and it's definitely I could see why my mom loves it. She loves that type of stuff,
Yes.
and yet she doesn't really like The Odd Couple, I feel like, which is like kind of
No.
weird,
No, she
you
likes
know.
them when they're old and crotchety, yes.
Yeah.
like Out to Sea she loves too.
Okay, Out to Sea is interesting.
Yeah, it's good for some laughs.
That's true. All right, Joe, you're number two.
All right, my number two is this movie, The Taking of Pelham 123. I cannot say enough good about this film. So, but I'm going to go on and on all week about it, so I don't need to say it here.
Exactly.
It's going to show up. It's going to show up in a couple of lists.
I can't imagine why.
Yeah. And then my number one is The Bad News Bears. I just think that he is so perfect in that movie as Buttermaker. There's no way you could ever imagine anyone else in that role. Just everything about that movie is so great. It's my favorite baseball movie of all time. I don't think it's the best baseball movie of all time, but it's far and away my favorite. I mean, I love it. I love the kids. I love him. I love everything about it. Supporting characters, screenplay, the soundtrack is just amazing movie.
Okay. I definitely can see that. I'm a big fan of the Bad News Bears. I actually rewatched it probably about 2 months ago, and I really enjoyed rewatching it. My problem with it is anytime I think about it, I'm like, you know, and I was in Little League for 4 years. I couldn't imagine any of my managers being Buttermaker. You know, it's like he doesn't seem
good thing.
He doesn't seem like he was a former ball player. You know, he really, really went downhill. You know, that's what it comes down to.
Maybe that's what cleaning pools, all that chloride. I don't know.
Maybe.
Chlorine, sorry, not chloride.
Again, but, you know, he had the kids doing most of it, so, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, he knew how to pass the buck. All right, and Cassie, you're number one.
My number one is The Taking of Pelham 123. I mean,
yay.
It's like
it's the only one you've seen all the way through.
Yes, it is. It is. So that does give it the spot. But also, I just found it like really entertaining. Like the music was good. The plot was good. Like it was very like engaging. Because I feel like sometimes with 70s movies for me, like it's hard. Like sometimes I'm like, I don't know, like. I just feel like it was very entertaining the whole way through, you know, whether it was somebody's accent, whether it was like the action and stuff. Like, I just found it just honestly very, very entertaining. And I knew I would like it, but I liked it so much more than I thought I would.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Definitely.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
All right. Okay, so now we will play the daily game of Name That Remake. We're going to see how this tag team is going to work with you guys doing it. So we're going to spin the wheel and see what movie is going to come up and whether the two of you together can try and figure out what movie this is.
All right, we got this, Cass.
All right.
Okay. So for this one, the original came out in 1968. And the remake was made in 2005. Okay. And you
don't know
the answer?
I think I have a good guess.
Yeah, you go ahead.
Oh, yeah,
you go ahead.
Planet of the Apes.
No, sorry.
Dang.
Okay. No, Planet of the Apes, the remake came out in 2001.
Oh, well, it's terrible anyway, so.
That is true, but that's not the point.
All right, well, I'm out, Cassie. Now it's all you.
Oh, my God. Wait.
Okay, well, I have to give you a little bit of I'll give you a little bit of a synopsis. Don't you want that?
Okay, great.
We're just going to try and get it out of the blue.
Oh, that's cheating.
Okay. A widow and a widower meet and decide to join their families together, but need to try and find a way for everyone to feel blended.
Oh. Oh my God. Wait. Oh, wait. It's not. Oh my God. No, it can't be that. No, it can't be. No, because they had the kids. No, wait. I know. I feel like I know what this is. I feel like I've seen this. Oh my God. Dad, you can't like help me out here, right?
I think I might. No, but I'm not sure.
I feel like I've seen this.
Is it Yours, Mine, Ours?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. Because at first I was like, it can't be like cheaper by the dozen because they have those
no,
babies.
No, cheaper by the dozen.
Yeah, it's crazy. But then I was thinking like, no, there is a... Yeah. But yes, okay.
Right. Yeah. To me, Yours, Mine, and Ours is among one of my favorite movies because I actually saw it when I was so young because I was part of a blended family. So it was, you know, when we got our first VCR, you know, my parents made sure that that was one of the movies that we would watch. And I saw it so much as a kid, you know.
Oh, I love that. That's great.
Because, you know, again, we're a blended family. We never had an Hours. And the irony of it is that in my marriage, we're also a blended family, but we do have Yours, Mine, and Ours. So you know, that fits so perfectly, you know, from that perspective.
Excellent. Very cool.
Exactly. All right. So would you like to tell people where they can possibly find both of you besides listening to this podcast?
All right, I'll go first. You can find me on my blog, which sometimes once in a while I write on. It's Von Luger's Butter, and yes, named after, of course, The Great Escape. It's at torahfish.wordpress.com. You also find me on all the social media sites, including Instagram, Twitter, Threads, and of course Letterboxd, which I absolutely love.
And you're also on Facebook.
Oh yeah, I know. I try not to let people find me there, but that's okay.
Okay.
All good. Facebook's too political. But anyway, so yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I wish I had a blog. I'm working on making a Letterboxd because, you know, Dad really wants me to.
Yes, but, I keep bothering him for that.
But I do, you can find me on like social media, like Instagram. Don't have a Twitter, or I guess X, they're calling it now.
It's Twitter.
Still Twitter.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I do have a Facebook and I have a Threads, but I don't really use it. I just kinda like stuff. But you know, I feel like Dad, I haven't written anything on your blog yet, right?
No.
No.
There's
so maybe one day he'll let me write something for his blog and then you'll find me there too.
There we go.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movieroundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow,
Gesundheit.